This is the Formation Lab.
Welcome one, welcome all to the Antiques Roadshow that is the Formation Lab. I am not your host, Luke. I am indeed your host, Tim. We got you again. Ooh. You thought it was going to be Luke, but it wasn't. It was me. Haha, switcheroo. But I am joined, as always, by my partner in grime, Luke. Luke, how are you this evening in the great northern wilderness that you call home?
I'm cold, man. It is cold out here. Racing season has officially wrapped up. Basically for the entire year for me. So now I'm in that weird limbo between like, okay, I don't have to travel to any races in warm locations anymore, and it's not cold enough to do fun things. So let's talk about racing. Let's talk about Formula One and IndyCar, because ain't nothing going on out there. It's just rainy and dreary. And, luckily, the hot stove season for IndyCar and Formula One is kind of in effect right now, because there's no shortage of talking points, Tim.
No, there is no shortage of talking points. And indeed, we should just roll into the first one. We apologize again for our delay on this episode. We had some power issues locally, so things had to be sorted out. But we are back this week with your rundown of the Mexican Grand Prix. It was a race that happened.
It happened. And not only did it happen, Tim, boy, howdy, it happened in Mexico City.
It surely did. And it encompassed.
You know what else happened?
They went around two baseball stadiums, and I still think that's awesome, and I'll plug it every time I can.
Uh-huh. Yep. They did do that. What else? Oh, how can we forget the big talking point from that weekend? Max Verstappen won.
He did indeed win. Yep, mm-hmm. For I believe the 14th time.
They did 71 laps.
They did do that. Yep, so,
and they qualified in an order.
There were no safety cars.
No safety cars. Yeah, that's a huge talking point.
And that's it. It was a race that happened. So Ferrari, there you are.
Qualified Ferrari as well. They ran a race. Mm-hmm. Is that all we got? Hold on. We completely blanked. The biggest talking point out of the weekend, of course, six cars finished on the lead lap, Tim.
Six cars did indeed finish on the lead lap. Yeah, yes. Yeah. Yes. The drama actually from the Mexican Grand Prix was not on the track, as you can tell from our dismay at the terribleness of the race product that they put on. But yeah, it was indeed off the track between the entirety of Red Bull and Sky Sports. Specifically Ted Kravitz for saying, what was his exact quote, Luke? Because honestly, I listened to the broadcast and I thought it was innocuous as it could be.
Yeah, so Ted Kravitz, he was doing the post-race report, right? Kravitz's notebook, I think it's called, right? Now, it's important to add context. They're talking about Formula One and movies and movie scripts. Of course, Lewis Hamilton is in talks with, I believe, Brad Pitt for a Formula One-based movie, right? Formula One's very own Days of Thunder. Now, he goes, you know, it really kind of leads to, you know, he goes, really the movie could almost write itself this year. If you were pitching Hollywood a script, you know, this is in the context of a Hollywood script, right? He goes, quote, Hamilton doesn't win a race all year and then finally comes back at a track where he could win his first race all year, battling the same guy who won the race he was robbed in the previous year and manages to finish ahead of him. And quote, what a script and story that would have been. But that's not the way script turned out today, was it? Because that's the guy that beat him after being robbed actually overtook him. And because he got a quicker car because of an engineering and Formula One design, that's pretty much because of, and then he gestures towards Adrian Newey over there. Okay. So Red Bull does not like the fact that he robbed him in the previous year, but two things on that. One, this is in the context of a movie script. Right. Like, so, I mean, that does change quite a bit. Right. You didn't directly insinuate that
oh, he was robbed. It was Hamilton feels robbed, blah, 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 right? Mm-hmm. You're writing a movie script. You're writing drama. Two, even if he does say that Hamilton, that Verstappen robbed Hamilton, I didn't blink twice at that, Tim. I'm not to get into, oh, Red Bull cheat, oh, Red Bull, blah, 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 but like, is it not okay to acknowledge that this was an extremely controversial decision?
And the FIA, by its own admission, broke their own protocol, so that shouldn't have happened. I think for me, it comes down to Max Verstappen feeling disrespected.
Uh-huh.
And it does. They're just grasping for a reason to get behind their guy. They have no other dog in that fight. No one probably thought anything of it until Max said that he was upset. And to be honest, yeah, it's innocuous enough. And yeah, there's a clear interpretation that you could get robbed. The rules and selective application saved Red Bull last year. Like there's no two ways about it. Lewis Hamilton was so far up the road, it was ridiculous.
Yeah.
And to say that someone wouldn't feel robbed or wouldn't feel, that things were unjust is just to deny basic logic. And I can't believe that they took this stance, but I think it's dominantly just to make Max feel like they've got his back, which is just such schoolyard bullshit.
So let's talk about that, because a lot of comments and much ado has been made about the toxic, because Red Bull, to me, in a way that Mercedes is not, and I'm trying not to play favorites here. I don't even like Mercedes, but I feel like I have to defend them half the time. Is Red Bull to me is they know how to whip Twitter and Instagram into a frenzy in a way that nobody else does, because Red Bull dominated headlines, by the way, right when that decision came out about their financial weirdness, we'll say, right? Mm-hmm. And I had the displeasure of scrolling through some of the toxic stuff that's on Ted Kravitz's, Instagram. Kravitz has always been an arrogant. I remember one interview he did with Eddie Irvine after Eddie leaves. He said, that's why he didn't win a championship for Ferrari. Totally unnecessary. Another person, you are destroying this beautiful sport by yourself. You must be proud of yourself. Clowns, clown emojis everywhere. Die sooner. I'm literally just reading a screenshot from Reddit here. How do you wake up in the morning and think maybe I should move to somewhere where nobody knows me, preferably the moon without oxygen? Thank you. Get crushed by a car, Ted. Left your brain. Like,
it's just hateful stuff that people are saying on the internet.
And to me, I think that's where Red Bull rubs me the wrong way. I get standing by your guy, but you complain on one hand about how toxic F1, how toxic everything's been online, how toxic we are. And yet, you know darn well that the biggest perpetrator of a lot of this is when you whip your fan base into a frenzy. Let me tell you. Sorry, not to interrupt, but just to me, like when Alfa Romeo gets in a beef with Alpine, do you think any Alfa Romeo or Alpine fans are out here doing this? Do you think McLaren fanboys do this? Ferrari fanboys are too beat down to even consistently do this.
Right. It's mostly that. I don't know. I think it's deeply irresponsible to play politics that way. I think it's irresponsible when it's government involved. I think it's irresponsible when the sport is involved. I get that you have to use whatever bully pulpit you think you have, but good Lord. And I think it speaks to the strength of teams maybe being too high in certain situations. But that being said, at the end of the day, they'll back down eventually and Ted will issue an apology for the imagined slights of Max Verstappen and we can move on. And hopefully Max will decide to have a thicker skin moving forward because he's going to need it this weekend when they go to Brazil.
Brazil,
we both love it
and Austria are my two favorite tracks. I mean, I think Austria still is my number one, and then Brazil is my number two, but I mean, what a magical place this is, and it might be ruined by rain, because let me tell you right now, Interlagos is looking at, it's looking at three straight days of rain, and we all know how much Formula One absolutely adores using their wet tires.
Yeah,
how many rain races have we given an A+, or like an A- minimum in a row, and then they stop doing it? It's kind of ridiculous.
It really is. And, I get that probably the intention is because they want to limit the amount of damage done to cars to help with the cost caps. I understand that it's a cost thing. However, you're robbing us of great racing. I've had the good fortune recently get some days off. And I'm down here in my shop area, and I have the TV going, and I have the Canada 2011, which is my favorite race. It's my go-to feel good. I can turn it on and I know most of what's going on. It's that background noise type show for me. And it was bonkers because the Martin Brundle and the BBC team were pushing for them to start the race. They were like, oh, it's, I know it's raining, but it's going to pick up again soon. Keep going. Let's start this thing. And you got the team saying, oh yeah, we're all right, we can go. And it's a completely different mentality, just 11 years removed. It blows my mind.
Yeah. It to me too. I mean, how many highlights historically have come off of rain races? If you want a TV product, which, I mean, like, F1 has been pimping itself for TV in a lot of ways over the recent years, right? I mean, like, that's not really a hot take, right? F1 has sought to become a better marketable product in terms of, watching on TV. I don't know why you wouldn't in that aspect, because it's such a watchable thing when you're in the rain. Granted, I don't think Singapore would have been a banger if you just say, hey, let her rip in the downpour. Singapore's not the right track for that, but
no.
Goodness.
Neither is Baku.
Yeah.
With the castle section.
But I mean, again, though, it's like, give it a test. It's the great equalizer. Great.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the great equalizer. Interlagos in the rain could be magical, to be honest.
It really would be magical. I would love for them to have the balls to do it, but I think they're just a bit cowardly right now.
I would say so. And I also understand I understand driver safety, one, but two, speeds in the rain are to such a point where this safety systems are almost over designed, if that makes sense, right? Like you rarely see the rain injuries outside of Jules Bianchi, which is very obviously an exterior thing outside of just being in the rain. To me, it's like spinning out on like ice in a parking lot. You're like, well, it wasn't great, but you're not gonna hurt too much. in the rain. But I think it comes down to teams are on a budget now and they don't want to hurt their budget. Sooner or later, somebody's got to just bite the bullet and be like, look, obviously the number that we have to fix the car needs to go up, which means that this area and this area needs to go down. But
They push back on the FIA and say, we can do closer racing and more thrilling racing if you make exceptions for crash repair and things like that.
Crash repair, maybe like a crash repair waiver system where like you get, if X number of teams or, X G force is hitting, or X times per year, you get one free like-for-like rebuild of the car in terms of like crash repair damage.
Yeah, something along those lines.
I mean, honestly, making all crash repair free might not be, or just exempt, might not be a terrible idea. The problem is you run into very gray area when it comes for a like-for-like rebuild. Oh, well, we just mounted this new wing on because we had it sitting around and we were going to debut it next race, and that is technically a rebuild.
yeah, that's a little bull hockey, but there has to be some way. Because, I mean, guys, they don't, you don't see guys lick the stamp and send it this way anymore.
The racing has been so neutered this year. You know, you had some wheel to wheel, and then you know, in the beginning with Bahrain, but that was about it. That was about as fun as the season got was Bahrain. That was a peak.
We talk about keeping the powder dry a lot. And in terms of preserving points, you know, 6 points is worse than 8 points, but it's a heck of a lot better than 0 points. You're seeing the keep the powder dry mentality extend into financial situations. 1 point is better than 0 points, but 0 points in an intact car is better than 1 point
and the wrecked one.
Yeah, and $200,000 of damages.
Yeah.
You know, or 1 point, but you had to go get a new wing, you know, and it's just like, I think that honestly, repair costs have gotten to such a point under the budget cap that you're looking at them outweighing the importance of points. And that's a big issue to me. I mean, it's what we just kind of hit on, right? Points should be the most valuable thing, you know?
I completely agree. And it's not right now. And the focus is on so many external factors and operations that they are completely destroying their racing product. You know, and there has to be some discussion about the severe lack of, you know, going for it that we're seeing now. So, I don't know. We're going to see. Great segue to what we had written up next, but
hey, South America.
But if they want to go to South America in Brazil,
yes,
there's another thing that went there.
Yeah. So this is exciting. And it also includes South America, because to me, South America is an underserved F1 market. You know, we talk a lot about markets in terms of US races, in terms of Middle East races, but let's be real with you. The South American fans deserve more international level racing. They really do. South America used to have 2 Grand Prix. Did they have a third? I'd have to double check, but I know they used to have 2. GPs historically, right? 1 in Brazil and 1 in Argentina, and only to Brazil now. And to be honest, I don't think F1 is super interested in, if F1 had to lose a race and it was Brazil, they brass would go, right? Okay.
Yeah.
IndyCar, however, also used to be in South America, and Juncos Hollinger Racing brought IndyCar to Argentina this year. Now, they didn't have a race. In fact, they didn't even have, you know, multiple cars. It was Juncos Hollinger's IndyCar, and they went earlier this week to 3 tracks. The Circuit of Buenos Aires, which you might recognize as Autodromo Juan E. Oscar Galvez. The Circuit of Buenos Aires is basically where F1 used to hold their races, right? It's got the big, almost oval-like section around the lake, you know?
Yep.
And then they went to the Circuit de Termas, Rio Hondo. Rio Hondo is where the MotoGP race is right now. And then Santiago del Estero for some exhibition laps. And they did that with Argentinian touring cars. And Agustin Canapino, if I'm pronouncing that right, was behind the hill. Now, was behind the wheel, which is noteworthy in that it's a low-tier IndyCar team doing exhibition laps in front of, you know, touring car races with a driver that's not even an IndyCar driver. I'm not going to lie. I have never heard of Agustin Canapino.
Anyone else, according to Reddit.
But do you know who, you know, how many people showed up there? Like 50,000 to 60,000 people are going nuts watching this thing. And Juncos Hollinger and the promoters of some of the Argentinian touring car races are apparently trying to really talk to IndyCar to say, hey, exhibition points,
let's get these cars down here. Let's get these cars, you know, into the international sphere. And I think that is something that IndyCar lacks right now.
Do you think that IndyCar could become a, like, could they scale to international? Like that, I'm just thinking, like, I wouldn't think of Champion League football growing to international.
They did before. In fact, that's why we have so many Brazilian drivers, right? Is the old kart series used to run down in Santiago. They used to run Brazil. Let me pull up a sample season, right? But I think the problem is in the reformation era at post 2008, right?
Yeah.
You had an issue in that, hey, financially, it cost X million to go there, and we're going to make, and per team, you know, $2 million to go there per team, and our budgets are $6 million, and each team's going to make like $500,000, right? That's not great. But let's take a look at the 1999 FedEx Kart Series, okay? This was Juan Pablo Montoya was rookie season. Hold on. Tarso Marquez, Christian Fittipaldi, Roberto Moreno, Elio Castroneves, Luis Garcia Jr., Gualter Salles, Mauricio Gubelmin, Roberto Moreno, Gualter Salles, Luis Garcia Jr. These are all Brazilian drivers. Raul Borse, like a ton.
Senna.
Yeah. No, these are all Tony Kanaan. These are all Brazilian drivers in this one season, by the way. You had Homestead Miami Speedway, Twin Ring Motegi. So they raced at the Oval at Twin Ring Motegi in Japan, right? Then you did Jarapagua in Rio de Janeiro. Jarapagua in Rio de Janeiro. You did Toronto, Vancouver, and then you did Surfers Paradise in Australia.
Wow.
It has a history of being more international than it is. In fact, if you can go back, I mean, Jarapagua in, I think I'm saying that right, in Rio de Janeiro is actually historically, it's hosted several kart races. I mean, you can go back. I think it's hosted like a decade's worth of kart seasons. So IndyCar has in the past been able to do that. Same with Surfers Paradise. Surfers Paradise was a multi-year thing from 1991 to 2008.
Wow.
So I think there's a historical basis for that. I think when they have raced, they had a street circuit in one of the Brazilian towns where basically, was it Sao Paulo? I'm testing my IndyCar knowledge here, but they had a street circuit where Carnival, right? They have a street where all the parade happens, and they have 20,000 seat grandstands surrounding this street, right?
Yeah.
And they were like, okay, that looks like a start finish straight. Boom. And they had a street circuit down in Brazil.
It would be very cool. And I love that it was Juncos Racing, the plucky little underdog that could. That made that happen.
Yeah, and I think they could. I think right now they need to focus on two things. One, there's no excuse to not race in Mexico at this point.
Yeah, no, none at all.
They could race where F1 was if they want to avoid that comparison. There's a lot of places that have hosted hosted previous F1 races. There's a lot of ovals there. Absolutely, historically, host some races. I in Mexico, I think too, it's a market thing, right? Formula One does not. I don't think Formula One really cares that it's in South America, Tim.
No, I don't think they do either. I think I love Mexico City, but the only reason they really go to Mexico City is to satisfy the billionaire that backs Sergio Perez, whose name I can't remember, but I know he backed Ayrton Senna as well back in the day, and is kind of a really awesome individual. Mm-hmm. But that's the only reason it goes to Mexico City is because he loves, he's from Mexico and he wants that to happen. And the only reason we go to Brazil is out of honestly duty to Ayrton Senna and the Brazilian fans. Like, it would be absolutely criminal not to give them a race, but that's all they're doing is they're giving them a race. They're not celebrating it. They're not trying to build it. They, you know, it's just kind of there.
Yeah. You have to be rich to go to Formula One, and two, it's, you have to be really rich comparative to the rest of a lot of South Americans to afford F1, right? Like, you don't have to be extremely rich in America by American standards to be like, yeah, I can drive over to Austin and buy a $250 GA ticket. I mean, that's not cheap, but decent amount of Americans could theoretically do that, right?
Yeah.
There's a lot of rabid South American fans in Argentina, in Brazil, who are yearning for a working man's Grand Prix, if you will, which is what IndyCar kind of specializes in. There's a lot of guys who can't afford a $500 ticket, but they can save up all year for a $35 IndyCar GP ticket, you know?
Oh, yeah.
And I think that international exposure is only going to make another wave of drivers come in, and it's only going to increase the amount of viewership eyeballs that you have. By the way, so I have a list. 2007, they stopped at Circuit Zolder in Belgium, TT Circuit Assen in the Netherlands, in Eurospeedway Lausitz, of course, in 2003 and 2001. Hermanos Rodriguez, 2002 to 2007, Fundidora Park in Monterrey, Mexico, 2001 to 2006, Sao Paulo Street Circuit, the one I was talking about, 2010 to 2013. I don't remember that too much, but maybe I missed that when I was growing up. Race Two Worlds at Monza in 57 and 58. That's an old one. Autodromo Rafaela in Argentina in 1971 and Autodromo Nelson Piquet in 1996 to 2000. So they have a history in South America and in Europe to an extent.
They really do. And they really should go back there. IndyCar should. They are criminally underserved. But I do have something you're going to really enjoy, I think, in terms of segue, because do you know who Brazil just admitted full citizenship to?
I do, Tim. Who is it?
That would be one Sir Lewis Hamilton of the British Empire, and indeed the Mercedes Empire. And the Mercedes Empire had an interesting conundrum this week.
They did indeed.
Did you
they
like that?
They did indeed.
Did you like that?
Yeah. Hey, Tim, how's that crypto investment doing?
Oh, you know, a lot of people are being put on suicide watch.
Oh, well, at least I have all this money in FTX. Let's see, what is FTX value right now?
Big old goose egg.
Oh, hold on. It's up 66% to nothing.
Yep.
So FTX is a cryptocurrency exchange, and it's fallen off a cliff, to say the least, right? It was, 1st of November is at $25 a clip. And right now it's at, right now, as of recording right now, $2.31.
That's not great.
It's not great. And why is that? That's because the entire place is collapsing and Binance, I think, was going to buy them. I'm not a crypto guy. Basically, the thought was someone could invest in them. No, they're just going to let it die. Problem is, Tim, on the wing of that old Mercedes car, there's a giant FTX logo, ain't there?
That is a big old FTX. But FTX will indeed live on forever, regardless of its non-existence, because it is also on the umpires' jerseys for Major League Baseball. So they are immortalized with the no pitcher. Yeah. No hitter pitched in the World Series. No pitcher. My goodness, I am tired.
Goodness.
But it, you know, the FTX, yeah, they're gone. Yeah, that thing is on there. And Mercedes is not taking it off because that would cost money.
It would cost money. And I think, too, that the thought is FTX is facing bankruptcy. It needs to raise billions of dollars to get itself out of a liquidity crisis. Right. But the problem is should they manage to somehow get themselves out? I think legally it would be easier just to let that bad boy be on there until the contract's up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
I suppose because the thought was that Binance was going to, who, by the way, sponsors Alpine, was going to buy it, but then they decided not to, right? Let's suppose Binance goes, oh, hold on, I do want to buy that. All of a sudden now you've already prematurely taken that off for a race. That's questionable. The problem is here is that not only is FTX going out, FTX was a big name, all right? This is the inherent problem because they Mercedes is not the only team that will get themselves into this.
No.
Red Bull has a giant Bybit logo on the back of their wing, right? Binance is Alpine, right? There's these companies popped up. It was a bubble. It is a bubble, right? That doesn't mean for all my crypto bros, that doesn't mean that, you know, there's a dot-com bubble. That doesn't mean websites aren't a thing, but it does mean that the speculation period is a little ridiculous. And as things collapse, I think there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to lose quite a bit of cash influx from these wild speculators in terms of
speculators,
crypto people.
Yeah. In terms of cryptocurrency, yeah, you'll see a lot of that go away. McLaren has a crypto. Ferrari has a crypto. Aston Martin has their crypto. So they're going to be losing
big in IndyCar, you know.
Yeah, but I think what you're going to see happen is nothing will alter with the cars really toward the end of the year. They're not going to rip the bandages or the bandages. Good Lord, they're not going to rip the advertisements off until they absolutely have to, or it costs them money to do it, or if it's free, I mean. The only way it's free is if another sponsor comes. So you won't see those advertisements as they get new cars next year, but you be prepared to watch them for the rest of this year.
Yeah. Yeah. And like I said, it's probably just a contract thing. I would be shocked if we have more than like two sponsors, crypto sponsors in like 2 or 3 years' time.
I don't even think we'll have one next year.
I would think we'd have one or two. It's like I said, it's a dot-com bubble. I think realistically there were always too many people, too many products in that space to realistically be long-term viable. How many oil companies sponsor Formula One teams? And oil companies are were as stable as you can get for a hot second, but there were more crypto companies than oil sponsorships. Let's talk. What else? Oh, Haas. Speaking of questionable sponsorships, Haas is reportedly, they haven't confirmed it. They actually put it off today. Looks like Nico Hülkenberg might be racing instead of Mick Schumacher coming into next year.
Yeah, which leaves Schumacher off the F1 grid for 2023. Bummer. That's a tough one. He was there because he was a Ferrari reserve driver and he is no longer that. So they're not getting money for him. It would be my assumption. And they are looking to make some money on that seat. So they look for someone with a sponsorship, which Nico Hülkenberg, I do believe, comes with.
I'm very curious to see what Nico Hülkenberg does in comparison to Mick Schumacher. Yeah, Mick hasn't blown my socks off this year, but how many drivers have actually blown my socks off at any given point this year?
Yeah, but I do think you'll see that they are going to be the most ragtag duo on the grid next year. They're just going to let it all hang out because neither of them has a thing to lose.
Yeah.
So I think you'll see an edgy, cool Haas next year if it is indeed Nico Hülkenberg, which I do hope is the case.
Yeah. Speaking of Haas too, MoneyGram will be their title sponsor in a multi-year deal. The digital pay to person to peer-to-peer payment system will be MoneyGram Haas Formula One team, I do believe. And that's also going to include I'd assume a ton of car sponsorship. This is good for Haas. I should mention too that Nikita Mazepin is apparently suing Haas over unpaid wages. Good luck with that. And then your Uralkali is demanding $13 million and 8.6 in compensation. Haas say they're owed $8 million, but Haas, they found themselves a new sponsorship that is not tied to shady Russian money. At least I assume. I don't think MoneyGram is a Russian company.
I don't think it is, but I've been known to be wrong about those things.
Yes. We have, what do we got next? Oh, NASCAR. NASCAR had the best weekend.
NASCAR,
the other weekend.
NASCAR bailed out that weekend.
Yes.
NASCAR decided to lick the stamp and send it. So let's wind it back a little bit.
Yes.
Luke, to yesteryear. When I was a kid, I had the Nintendo 64. That evolved into the GameCube. And a common thing you could do if you're playing those two systems with your car, if you put it on the outside, it goes faster and you might be able to slingshot around. And it was a good cheat if you couldn't pass somebody. And worked out great, but it was a video game and everybody knew it was a video game. And that was kind of a cheap way to do it, but it was fun because it was, you're a kid and that's kind of cheeky and ha ha. I never actually thought I would see an adult do it. But apparently Ross Chastain, who I believe was needed to be in the points to make the final round of the playoffs. Yes.
Yes. So in the NASCAR playoffs, obviously they're a silly little thing, but what he basically needed to do was finish within three positions of the number 11 car of Denny Hamlin. And he was, if I'm not mistaken, five spots behind Denny Hamlin going into the final corner. Tim?
He was five spots behind, and he asked his team over the radio, what do we need? And, or do we need it? And they responded, yes, you need to be in there. So he put it into fifth gear, took it up to the wall, just like you did when you were playing Nintendo, and he let go of the wheel and he let the car ride the wall all the way to a fourth place finish. That is the most awesome video game move I've ever seen in real life.
It's in Martinsville, you usually have to go from fifth gear all the way down to, I think, third gear to get around the corner. It's a very narrow thing. He goes, nope, F it. I'm going to upshift, baby.
Yep.
We call it the Hail Melon. Hail Mary from a melon farmer, baby.
Hail Mary from a melon farmer. Yeah,
it worked. I can't believe it worked.
And it worked. And the funniest reactions, some people were cagey. The funniest reaction to me, though, came from a man, and he described it as embarrassing for NASCAR. It's a childish Bush League move. NASCAR people should be embarrassed. That came from one Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson, who should know a thing or two about shame, as he decided to share with the entire world the contents of his heart and utter a racial slur in malice.
He knows a thing or two about embarrassing himself.
Exactly.
Embarrassing NASCAR.
So to hear that from him would kind of just be like Keith Richards pointing the finger for drug use.
What's funny too is, to me, everyone else on the grid, you can go and listen to the driver and the radio spotter reactions, and every one of them are like, oh my God.
I can't believe that works.
It really does work. Go, no way. Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah. And it is likely to be outlawed next year. But hey, at least it worked that one shiny moment.
Here's the thing too, is it only works at that track. There's no guarantee that that's going to actually work at any other track, right? Like you have to have that kind of narrow, that narrow of a turn, a downshift, blah, blah, blah. It's not going to really work too much in,
elsewhere.
Like a Daytona. Right.
So,
oh, by the way, off topic. I do remember Sao Paulo. 2013, the Sao Paulo Indy 300. I remember that. That was one of the best races IndyCar's had this decade or last decade. Yeah. So I stand corrected. Sao Paulo Indy 300. Indy, get back to South America, please. We got one more thing to talk about. F1 Vegas tickets are on sale now. They might have sold out already. Tim, they're expensive as hell.
Yes, they are. For a general admission ticket for the 3 days, it is $500. And if you want a seat of any kind, the tickets start at $2,000. Now, that cost does include 3 days, and you do get a square meal for each one, each level. I'm sure you get a little bit more for your $2,000, but I haven't bothered to look at it because I was just appalled.
Call me crazy. That's not as bad as I thought it would be.
You have a built-in cheat code. That's not fair.
I know. You have to. I'm not staying anywhere. But
the totality of it.
Let's talk about what gets in that $500 for a 3-day GA ticket, right? Like that 3 days. That's like $175 a day, something like that, right? You get a meal. It's all inclusive. Well, it's not all inclusive. It includes free beverages and drinks, non-alcoholic. I've seen worse deals.
I've seen a whole lot better. I feel like it's not gonna go very well. And unfortunately, it will aid in the perception that Formula One is just for rich people. And it's not.
Yeah. Let's talk about where they really do get your money though, because the prices for the rooms are nuts, dude. They are nuts. So let's go to Caesars. I went to Caesars.com. They own like five of the hotels, Rio, Bally's, Link, right? Rooms starting at the Flamingo in Las Vegas or Paris, because it'll go right by Paris. Average $2,578 per night and include access to grandstands 2.1 and turns 2 and 1. $2,571 per night.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I think it's pricey. I hope things mellow out here soon.
Oh, loud. Hold on. I'm on the Bellagio website right now for the Formula One. Oh my gosh. It's yeah. Heineken Silver, the premier booking experience. How much do you think it's a cost?
I'm going to go with $3,500
for a Bellagio hotel room. Well, we'll figure out in 2 minutes, Tim. Oh, what else do we have? Flat Rock, Tennessee is getting some good press coverage. They're saying that it could draw some stuff. I think what they might be going for, by the way, the Flat Rock Motorsports Park might be MotoGP.
I think we've talked about that. Yeah.
We did talk about that.
It could be a good IndyCar destination.
IndyCar would be a good destination. I really do think MotoGP really doesn't have a home in America. I know it races at COTA, but MotoGP and COTA don't get along very well.
Yeah.
To be honest with you.
Not at all.
What else? Nicholas Latifi has said that IndyCar ovals don't really scare him. He said that, you know, he'd race anything to make sure that he's within a, in championship contention, which I think is adorable that he thinks he's going to strive for the championship in the opening year. But I appreciate that he's like, you know, they really aren't.
He's
as
got
dangerous
ambitions.
As people think they are.
He's got ambitions.
He does. He does. You know, F1 is revisiting the standalone sprint idea. They're kind of saying maybe they got the go ahead for 6 sprint races in 2023, and they're now kind of talking to teams to see if anybody actually likes the idea. And I hope the answer is no.
Yeah.
I just,
as do I.
Yeah. Tim, is there any, like,
I think that's it. I'm just looking forward to Brazil. I'm going to be tuning into both practices tomorrow. I am jazzed. I will be watching qualifying and doing all that good jazz and watching the race on Sunday. It's going to be absolutely awesome. I can think of nothing else. No. Until next week.
I had a couple other things. I have one other. I have a couple other things on the Vegas GP. If you look at the track map in terms of where the Vegas GP is selling the tickets, there's no grandstands on the strip itself.
But there does appear to be grand straps, according to the Bellagio, on Bellagio property and on, I think, Caesars on at the Aria, I think. And to me, oh, also, if you buy tickets for one zone on the GP, you can't go to the other zones. So, like, if I buy tickets to the MGM Sphere zone, I can't go to turns one and two.
Yeah, that includes none of this the is paddock. Making it, that's not, none of this is making it better, and I have a bad feeling that a joke we made before the show is true, and that this I'm getting the more and more you're talking about it, the more and more Fyre Festival vibe I get.
I get a Fyre Festival vibe too. I'm curious because, like I said, there's no stands on the GP from the GP website. There's no stands you can buy on the Las Vegas Strip. I'm on the Bellagio website right now, and I'm seeing a mock-up of a large GP stand. In the Bellagio fountain, kind of on top of the fountain as they watch. So I guess the only way you can get in that is if you buy a hotel ticket, but the lockdown on that seems very weird to me. And like you said, I get Fyre Festival vibes. It's why I said no this year.
Yeah.
I almost went and then I said, let's make sure that we can,
Fyre Festival with a bit of Woodstock 99 about it.
Yeah. It's let me
like
let
it
me
could get, piss people off just enough to push them over the edge.
Yeah. Let me see them get a year under their belt and see how that goes before I decide if it's worth it. And honestly, if ticket prices go up next year by another $100, it's already too much. So what do I care?
Totally.
Let's see. Hold on. I just got in. I just got into the website. What are we doing? What are we doing? Select dates. I'm trying to go. $4,000, Tim.
Nope. That. Fuck that.